Blog Talk Radio.
Can you dig it? What the heck is going on here? Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale K from Spook Show, and I'm here with nobody. I wonder what's going on here. I don't see Gar. I don't see Dave. Thankfully, Fogsbane's in the chat. We had Vorpal Bite there a minute ago. I wonder where Dave is. I'm going to have to locate him. On a little theme, too. He needs to be here. Today I was going to do a little bit of talking since we're doing tunnels. I wanted to talk about one of my favorite television shows, The Time Tunnel. Fortunately, Eerie House comes fully equipped with its own time tunnel, so let me turn it on and see if I can get Dave sucked in to Eerie House. I see a shape forming. It's a familiar shape.
What the heck's going on here?
You're in Eerie House where you're supposed to be.
What are you talking about? I'm looking at my watch right now. I got another hour before I go on.
Dave, it's 6:30 Eastern right now.
Darn it, I got to stop setting this thing to Central Time.
I thought you forgot maybe the time change.
I was sitting there at Eaton Park. I had a sandwich. I was just about to devour my sandwich, and here I am, and you didn't even bother to bring my sandwich with me. Thanks a lot.
Well, I had no idea where you were. The settings on the time tunnel just centered to your Dave-ness and pulled you right in. I can't help it.
Must have a pretty strong pull, I'm telling you.
It's not like I'm a scientist. Yeah, if to get you away from a sandwich, heck yeah. like the gravity of Jupiter pulling him away. No. I hope it was pastrami.
At least you could have brought my waitress along. Cheese and crackers.
Yes. Could have kept her in the green room until the show's over.
Yeah, but the green is a mold, right?
Room.
Yeah,
it's
in
the green
mold, right?
Room.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
We lose more guests that way.
Yes, we do. But we are going to talk about tunnels today, and I do want to talk about that Irwin Allen classic, The Time Tunnel from the 1960s. What a great TV show that was.
Absolutely. It just, it was funny because my sister and I used to watch it. My brother was too young to really understand any implications. I mean, nowadays, my he's an archivist for Southern Methodist University, FMU, down in Texas. So he would love it now, but he was too young to enjoy it at the time. But, you know, just one of the several great Irwin Allen series. And he had the whole MGM library. That's why they could do things with maybe a dozen or two people that you couldn't do because you wouldn't have the cast to do it. They could use that as backgrounds and cut-ins. What a great show.
It was, and it was at a time, you know, Irwin Allen was hitting it. I mean, big time. He had the success of the television show Lost in Space, who, by the way, loaned the voice of the robot, Dick Tufeld, for the narration of The Time Tunnel. But he also was doing some great, in the period, he was doing some great disaster movies, too, like The Towering Inferno, Earthquake. He had other good TV shows.
Not very successful, but
The Land of the Giants was a good show, too.
Well, but, yeah, but that lasted longer than Time Tunnel. That lasted two seasons. And I'm trying to think what else. He had Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Can't forget that.
Which really completely changed from the time it started. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea was really about spy and espionage and the Cold War and everything, and ended up being about chasing sea monsters around with a sea view. you know, and aliens and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they it got sucked into some of the other Irwin Allen stuff. But you're right. It was very much like the film at first, where it was more like spy, protect the nation, into more science fiction or supernatural stories. They had a mummy. How do you get a mummy on a submarine, for crying out loud?
You know, when they said if you saw a sea monster on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, the next year you would see that on Lost in Space. That same monster, you know.
Yeah, make good use of that stuff, you know. But it was a good show. The premise was it was a secret government project in the bowels of underground complex in Arizona, of all places. Great stars, Robert Colbert as Dr. Doug Phillips, and as Dr. Anthony Newman, James Darren. One of my favorites, Whit Bissell, classic evil scientist from the I Was a Teenage movies, was Lieutenant General Kirk. General Kirk?
He was General, yes.
And then John Zaremba, you'd know him if you saw him. He's a bald fellow that plays an assistant often in some of the science fiction movies. And Lee Merriweather is Dr. Ann McGregor.
There you go. My favorite Catwoman.
And, yeah. the government project was called, oddly enough, Project TikTok. It was in its 10th year when they were trying to determine whether they're going to use it or not, and they're going to lose government funding, blah, 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 blah. So James Darren, the younger of the two, him and Doug, got a little impatient and put himself back in time. And Doug had to go and rescue him, and the rest of the shows were based on the fact that they couldn't bring him back to the present time, and they'd keep pulling them into somewhere else.
You know, it was so fun. Sometimes they had a lot of control over where they could send them to. They just couldn't bring them back. And then there were times where they acted like they had no control over anything. So,
yeah.
Well, I remember
sabotage.
One
then, somebody would try to ruin the tunnel, and then they'd really have problems. They couldn't even contact them. There were a lot of good plot devices for that show. That first one was good, though. It was Tony ended up on the Titanic.
On the Titanic,
by Michael Rennie, another sci-fi great.
Absolutely. It certainly was a good way to kick the series off. And I truly don't understand, except that, you know, maybe a lot of people didn't understand the histories under which they were making this. This was so different, where so much of the other Irwin Allen stuff was really about fantasy and science fiction type things. Where this was really based on histories. And like I mentioned, he had the whole MGM thing. So when they had big battles and things like that, they could use as backgrounds that the MGM, and then basically have a couple double extras and smoke and things like that, so you could barely see the backgrounds.
Tended to use a lot of stock footage, you know, for – great armies fighting, or I think they even used some of the Lost World. They went into a prehistoric period where they had dinosaurs, which were really lizards with fins glued on them. But they used a lot of stock footage in that show.
And like so many, like you and so many others, Time Tunnel itself has not been forgotten. There is a fan page of... actually, it's two pages. There are 42 stories of fan fiction that's been created about the Time Tunnel. And I thought that was interesting. I'm about to throw that into the chat right now.
Cool.
But there it is. But it's all fiction that's made by fans of the show using Tony and Doug and all these other people. Like I said, there's 42 complete stories there of these. And I'm sure it's something that grows every so often.
It is, and I think it was probably a little bit more popular with sci-fi geeks such as myself that are roughly my age, you know, grew up with the show or maybe caught reruns later on the sci-fi channel when they were playing it briefly. it was popular enough for Gold Key to make a comic book that ran from 66 to 67. And there have been paperbacks and a few other items.
That was the year after. That was the year after it went off, wasn't it? Wasn't it just? It was just the one season.
I
don't
think so. According to Wikipedia, it ran September 9th of 1966 to April 7th of 1967. So the Gold Key comic came out the same year.
Okay, so basically it probably ran concurrently with that. And of course, in my collection, I do have the entire series of the Time Tunnel in my collection as well.
It's a great collection to have, too. They're really good stories. I don't have a full 42 episodes yet, but they're fun to go back and watch and look at the adventures. And pretty good effects for television for the mid-60s, I thought. Their representation of time travel was cool with the little glowy lights and the guys floating around, apparently weightless. So they landed on another.
And they had some hard landings. I was surprised they didn't. Every once in a while they sprained an ankle or something, but they never broke anything. So.
Nah. another contributing factor to its excellence, in my opinion anyway, they also used John Williams for the credits.
Yes.
Credited as Johnny Williams at the time, much
Johnny
like he
Williams.
Was for Lost in Space.
Right, right. And he was a little younger then, and you know what? Probably, I don't think I heard him referred to as John Williams until he joined the Boston Pops and directed them. Then all of a sudden he went from Johnny to John.
John, must take him serious. The show was really good in special effects, winning an Emmy in 1967. The award went to L.B. Bill Abbott for his photographic special effects.
Fabulous. Yeah, and it's kind of even neat when you saw them in the tunnel, watching them through those rings and stuff. And I'm sure there was probably absolutely nothing there that they were actually looking at when they were watching what was going on. But that's possible,
but I do know that they built a giant, entrance to the time tunnel. I think the back portion of the tunnel was an effect for the illusion of depth of the tunnel.
Right.
But the first maybe 5 to 10 rings were a huge set, because periodically they would come back briefly, or maybe the scientific team would bring back someone from history by mistake instead of one of the boys.
And you know what I think? The time tunnel was one of the first, maybe the second time I ever saw Carol O'Connor. He was in the episode with, or he was Andrew Jackson, or he was in the episode with Andrew Jackson. I was thinking. No, because he was a scientist, as they said, back to that time. Yeah, that's right. Okay. but it was like only the second time, the other time being great. It's in my collection over there, and I can't. Naked City was the first time I saw Carol O'Connor. And this would probably be one of the second time I ever saw Carol O'Connor, not knowing who he was then, but knowing who he is now.
Yeah, he was in that episode 5, the Last Patrol, takes place in 1812, War of 1812.
War of 1812.
He's a British Army general.
But they not only had a great cast, they had a really interesting cast of guests from time to time. So.
I mean, you had Torrin Thatcher and Ellen Burstyn in the Crack of Doom episode. As I mentioned, Michael Rennie in that first episode.
Right.
They were very accomplished at getting various actors to appear. I'm trying to.
What a wonderful thought to bring back the time tunnel here on our Tunnel Vision Weekend Tunnel Vision show.
Yeah, a lot of interesting tunnels. There's, of course, the infamous Tunnel of Love at Coney Island. And, everybody's heard of the Holland Tunnel.
Holland Tunnel, right? Right, the Lincoln Tunnel.
The Lincoln Tunnel. There's a nifty one called the Tunnel of Love in the Ukraine, but it's not a structure of any sort. It's a hole through a forest for a train, but it's so green and so beautiful. They call it the Tunnel of Love because many people stop and have photos when gentlemen maybe request someone's hand in marriage or something like that, or other romantic type photos.
Tunnel of love never worked for me. All I did was always get my pants wet walking through that thing.
Yeah. Getting your pants wet in the tunnel of love. Let's move on.
I mean, some people took this boat. I didn't know. I just walked through it.
Ah, that's where you went wrong. You should have got in the boat. There's an amazing tunnel in China that has visual lighting effects as you go through it. There's morphing pictures and colors and gives you the illusion of greater speed than you're actually traveling. It's really kind of amazing, but I'm surprised people don't get sick on it.
Now, is this one that people drive through?
No, it's. I think it's a train tunnel.
Oh, I think of all the accidents I think it caused.
Oh, that, yeah, you couldn't do that and trust people to drive.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, there's the Zion Mount Carmel Tunnel in Utah, cut through sandstone. Pretty neat-looking thing. Ezekiel's Tunnel in Israel is from the 8th century, or excuse me, it was excavated, yeah, in the 8th century B.C. It was an aqueduct to ensure fresh water into a Jerusalem, even if there were an attack.
I think the aliens did
still,
it. I think
yeah.
The aliens did it.
Yeah, maybe. It's still there today, though. And then, of course, there's the Sequoia National Park tree tunnel. You can't drive through that.
Yeah.
You can only walk through it, which is probably a good thing. I can imagine drunks going through there. The Thames Tunnel, which obviously goes under the Thames from London to France. A couple in Norway. There's a great natural tunnel in Virginia. It's a train tunnel.
Not a word.
There's some really, really beautiful ones. We talked a little bit about caves yesterday, too. You know, when Gar was here, he brought up Carlsbad and a few of the other natural caves. Not really tunnels, though.
True. But there is a tunnel. There is a tunnel inside our radio show tonight, though.
There really is, and you mentioned it was something of a pastiche, or maybe perhaps inspired by The Shadow. Tell us more.
No, I said it was a ripoff.
Okay. I was trying to be polite. Uncharacteristically.
The Avenger. The Avenger, which was on 1941 to 42, basically, it kind of, there was an Avenger, the Pulp Fiction novel, of course. So many of these radio characters came out of Pulp Fiction, like The Shadow and such. And actually, so did the guy who created this. The scripts were written by Walter B. Gibson. Walter B. Gibson. Actually, he also worked under the pen name of Maxwell Grant. Other people also used the Maxwell Grant, but Walter B. Gibson himself actually found himself writing up to 10,000 words a day to satisfy public demand for the characters. He also created other programs as well as that. He said he was involved in all parts of The Shadow. He wrote most of the from the Shadow magazine, the pulp stories. He wrote most of those novels. But he claimed to have been part of the radio show. Maybe it was part of the dividing of it, although, you know, he never wanted the Margot Lane grant character. And it took him, I think the Shadow came out with the Margot Lane and the Invisibility in 1938 with Orson Welles. It wasn't until like 1940 when he finally put Margot Lane into one of the novels. And but he also created not only, as he said, the Shadow, but also the Avenger. He created that. He also was not only a prolific writer, it's just hard to believe how many stories the guy wrote, but he also created, he was also a magician, and he created a radio program called Blackstone, the Magic Detective. And that was his creation as well. And I think he wrote all of those scripts as well.
I've
as
heard
the novels.
A few of the Blackstones. They're pretty good.
They are pretty good. And you know, actually the story we're going to play tonight is a pretty darn good story. If it weren't such a cheap ripoff of The Shadow.
You know, don't hold back. How do you really feel about this?
the story itself is really good. Well, here's a guy. He's a scientist, and he's got a female assistant, and she's the only one that knows his secret identity. And they're best friends with a policeman. You know, how many more things do we have to get into before they just change the names to protect Maxwell Grant or something? I don't know. But I think it's interesting. The story itself, I think is great. It's a great story. It would have been just as well or better to be a Shadow story. But hey, it is what it is.
Let's take what we can get.
And in the midpoint here, we do have a little bit of thing, something that always bothered Gar about. Some of these shows that were in syndication, it's never really reached what The Shadow did. But I think part of it was because I don't really think this was an picked up by network. This was basically syndicated out to different stations that they could purchase the program and have it to air as often as they wanted. We can get into that a little bit after the first half, but the story, I think, is a good story, and there's a lot of a mystery to it. So as far as writing the story, it was great.
And we might as well enjoy part one right now. Here's Tunnel of Disaster, The Avenger.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected two inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. The telepathic indicator, by which he is able to pick up thought flashes, and the secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now... The Avenger and the Tunnel of Disaster. We'll finish this experiment later. It's time to listen to the broadcast now.
Oh, yes, Jim. I'd forgotten about that.
Why, Fern, how could you? Inspector White's talked of nothing else for a week.
You helped him write his dedication speech for the opening of the new tunnel, didn't you, Jim?
Yes, and he'll never forgive us if we don't listen to him deliver it.
No, I'll tune it in.
You know, they ran into so much trouble building that Riverport tunnel, I often thought they'd never finish it.
Well, folks, several thousand people are gathered here for the dedication of the new Riverfoot Tunnel that cuts through South Mountain. In another moment, the ceremonies will begin.
Jim, in the meantime, didn't the final cost of the tunnel amount to more than twice the amount originally planned for us?
That's right, Fern. The engineers ran into all sorts of difficulties. In fact, they advised the city council more than once to abandon the whole idea. It's pretty well known that the engineers wanted to resign, but the city held them to their contract.
Well, I suppose now that the tunnel is finished, it's worth all the money that was spent on it.
Yes, we'll relieve the traffic jams on the other tunnels and make it easier to get in and out of the city on the south side.
Oh, listen, Jim, they're ready to begin the ceremony.
All right.
And the work was carried forward. We are broadcasting to you from a helicopter from which we can see both ends of the tunnel. Now, in just a moment, our tunnel commissioner, Jonas Anderson, will drive the first car through the tunnel. Right now, the tapes are being cut, the municipal band is striking up, and the commissioner's car is entering the tunnel. As soon as the car emerges at the other end, the signal will be given for the first ticket to be sold. The commissioner is making this trip to establish a time record. And now I'm going to lower the mic over the side and let you listen to the band for a moment. This record run seems to be taking a little longer than expected. The commissioner's car should have come through by now. Inspector White of the police department has just ordered the band to stop playing. Something has gone wrong, folks. Stand by.
Jim, what could have happened?
Oh, a flat tire, most likely. It couldn't be anything else.
Yes, something is wrong here, folks. We're going to land our helicopter on the roadway so that we can give you a first-hand report.
Same with the radio, Fern. I'm going to see if I can pick up anything on the telepathic indicator.
Yes, Jim.
Nobody can understand what's happened here. Inspector White is going through the tunnel in a police squad car now, and we should know something in a minute.
Jim, did you pick up anything on the indicator?
Not yet, Fern.
Here comes the inspector's squad car now. We'll have news for you in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, a very strange thing has happened here. Inspector White reports that there is absolutely no sign of either the commissioner or his car in the tunnel. They've just disappeared.
Well, Jim, pick up anything?
Yes, Fern, I did.
What, Jim?
Amid impressions of great excitement, the indicator picked up a strong telepathic impression of violence and disaster.
What shall we do, Jim?
We'd better get out there to the tunnel right away, Fern. Inspector White will need us.
Okay, Joe, it's Jim Brandon. He's connected with my office. Let him through the ropes.
Thanks, Inspector.
Good grief, this is some mob.
Yes, Fern, we tried to get them to go home, but they won't budge. Over this way, Jim. I want to talk to you.
Say, how many guards were stationed in the tunnel when this crazy thing happened, Inspector?
Four, Jim. One on each end and two in the center. The center ones were knocked out, but they're in the hospital under guard.
There's not a chance that they know anything. If they did, they'd have been killed.
That's what I think. But here's something else, Jim. This note was found pinned to the coat of one of those guards.
What does it say, Jim?
It's a warning to the mayor. It says, Riverport Tunnel is a death trap. The public will never use it. Close it at once or disaster will strike again.
Well, anyway, it's a relief to know we're dealing with a flesh and blood criminal. For a while, it looked as though the commissioner had just disappeared into thin air.
Well, he has, Fern. We know that he went into the tunnel, and we know he didn't come out. He's not in there now, so where is he?
Inspector, I'd like to take a walk through the tunnel.
Oh, you won't find a thing, Jim. But come on.
Jim, think this will cause the tunnel to be closed for good, Inspector?
I don't know, Fern. That's up to the city council.
This tunnel cost the city $15 million. I'm betting they won't close it.
Well, whether they do or not, I've still got to crack this case, and in short order, too.
Wait. Where's that hammering coming from, Inspector?
Well, that's my men testing every inch of these walls, Jim. If there's a hollow spot, they'll find it.
Good work, Inspector.
Jim, have you got any ideas at all on this thing?
Not yet, Inspector. But there's got to be a joker in this deal somewhere. We'll just play the hand out, and we'll find it.
Yes, I'm Michael Evans. What's your business, Brandon?
Miss Collier and I came to make a few inquiries, Mr. Evans.
Well, get to the point then, Brandon. What do you want?
You were the construction engineer on the Riverford Tunnel, weren't you?
Yes. I wish I'd never heard of a blasted thing. I told them from the beginning that tunnel shouldn't be built, but they wouldn't listen to me.
Well, what were your objections to the tunnel?
Objections? Well, it was a waste of the taxpayers' money, for one thing. They could have built a road around both sides of that mountain for a fraction of what the tunnel cost. What if it does take a motorist a few minutes longer to reach the bridge? Safety's more important.
Inspector White says you received a number of threatening letters during the time the tunnel was under construction.
Yes, I turned them all over to the city council, but they didn't pay any attention. Those politicians...
Mr. Evans, how sound are the walls of the tunnel?
Young man, I'll put my work up against any construction job in the country.
Well, no, I'm not questioning your...
Here are the plans. The mayor told me to hand them over to you. Now, take them and get out. Your questions are an insult.
All right, Mr. Evans. You want to take that attitude, you're of no help to us. Come on, Fern.
Well, I've met some grumpy old men before, but Mr. Evans takes the prize.
Sometimes grumpiness is employed to hide uneasiness, Fern.
You mean you suspect him, Jim?
I haven't made up my mind about that yet. So far, I'm too busy wondering about something else I saw in that office.
What was that, Jim?
There was a tiny model of a gold smelter on the work table in there.
A gold smelter?
Yes. And I'm wondering what interest a construction engineer in the city could have in a gold smelter. This is the Hawley Steel Mill, Fern. That must be the office over there.
What do you expect to find out here, Jim?
Well, this visit is more or less of a shot in the dark, Fern. You'll notice that this land adjoins the city property on which the tunnel is located.
Oh, yes.
In going through the city records, I discovered that before the tunnel was built, the Hawley Steel Company tried to buy up all that adjoining city property. They didn't succeed. But I'd like to find out why they wanted that land.
That sounds like an interesting angle, Jim.
Oh, here's the office building. Well, I guess we just walk right in.
That you, Joe?
I know, it's Jim Brandon. I've got business with Mr. Hartley.
Well, there must be some mistake. Mr. Hartley's been dead for 3 years.
I want to see the man in charge, then.
Do you have an appointment?
No, but I think he'll see me. I'm from the police.
Oh, well, come in. I'm Theodore Ramsey, the general manager here.
This is my assistant, Miss Collier.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
I'm sorry to barge in on you this way, Mr. Ramsey, but there are a few questions I'd like to ask.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Brandon. Only I'm a little curious as to why the guard didn't call me from the gate to say you were coming.
I don't think he saw us. We came in the side entrance just as some trucks were pulling out.
I see. Well, go ahead, Brandon.
Some years ago, the Hawley Steel Interest tried to buy the city land adjoining this property. Why?
Well, old Mr. Hawley was living then. And when he heard the city was thinking of building a tunnel under this mountain, he was afraid it might undermine part of our property and endanger our business.
Oh, I see. Any other reason?
Well, frankly, yes. We had always hoped that the city would build a road around this end of the mountain. A great deal of our material is delivered in trucks, and a good road would be to our advantage. Naturally, a tunnel through the mountain would cancel out the road.
And you weren't willing to build the road yourself?
Well, not unless we own all the land.
Mr. Ramsey, do you own the steel mill now?
Oh, no. I'm just the general manager. Old Hartley's grandson, Lee Burgess, owns it.
Does he take an active part in running the mill?
Well, yes and no. You know how these rich boys are. He has an office over there near the smelting plant. But I don't think he's in it very often.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ramsey. This was just a routine check.
Oh, that's all right. Even though we weren't very keen on the tunnel at first, we're just as much upset as you are as the way things have turned out. Call on me again if I can be of any help.
One inspector, has the council decided whether they're going to open the tunnel or not?
Well, they reached a decision 2 hours ago, Jim. The tunnel is now open to traffic. I've just come from there.
Inspector, I just can't understand their opening the tunnel until you've had a chance to solve this case.
Fern, the council is inclined to believe that the whole disappearing aqua stage is some kind of a hoax, or even a publicity stunt. Maybe they're right. I don't know.
I'll get it, Jim. Hello? Yes, the inspector's here. Sure, hold on a minute, please. Inspector, for you.
Thanks, Fern. Hello? What? Holy smoke. Did you call the tunnel and tell them to stop all the traffic? Good. I'll get out there right away.
What's the matter, Inspector?
They just received a telephone call at headquarters saying disaster would strike the tunnel again at midnight. Come on, Jim.
Yes, the Avenger with his faithful assistant, Shargo Swain.
I told you. But it is a good story. It is a good story.
It is. They're building up the drama as to why maybe somebody doesn't want this tunnel to work out.
And we did get a clue as to it, as what could be a clue anyway. So but it's all very interesting, and more tension to come in part two. Before we get to that, though, there was, Gar has always been bothered by the fact of those long musical interludes like we had in. Now, I took out the two remaining ones, the one in the middle here and the one at the end, but I did play the first one. And the reason for that was that especially being a syndicated series, this is one of the three shows that my local NPR station was playing. And they played these on their Cisco Kid and The Avenger, and I forget what the other one, all of the Halls of Fantasy. They left these musical interludes in there because that's where the commercial would be placed since it was syndicated and didn't have a national sponsor. That's where your local sponsor could come in and help sponsor a particular purchase of a program. And to illustrate the point, earlier today, I went ahead and took that music bed that we heard earlier, and I placed a commercial in there as to how it would work. And I think you have that there that we could share, Dale.
And now a word from our sponsor.
The following program is brought to you by the Toothpaste Company of America. The Toothpaste Company of America makes all your favorite brands, and one of those brands is right for you. Are you always shooting your mouth off about something or other? Then you need our Gunpowder Toothpaste. It aims itself at plaque and buildup. Your teeth will be so white you'll feel you need a concealed carry just to smile. That's Gunpowder Toothpaste. And are you always sticking your foot in your mouth? Then get Dr. Shaw's Foot Powder Toothpaste. Not only will it help prevent cavities, it will also prevent athlete's tongue. Go toe-to-toe with Dr. Shaw's Foot Powder Toothpaste. So when you go to your local store, walk right up to your clerk and say, or put your teeth in and say, take me to the Toothpaste Company of America aisle. Be American. Buy American. The Toothpaste Company of America. Some brands packaged in China.
Thank you. lot. Now I'm thinking of foot and mouth disease, and blow, my tongue feels weird. Oh.
Yes, well, there are other toothpaste brands that can get that taste out of your mouth, too, I'm sure. Toothpaste Company of America, yes.
I'm scraping my tongue with my fingernails. Well, to get that
nobody
taste
wants,
out of your mouth.
Nobody wants athlete. Nobody wants athlete's tongue, Dale. Come on.
Oh, no one does, to be sure. And that, of course, something of a dedication to our friend Gar. Couldn't be here today, not feeling well. We miss him, and we always love him here, but and his input.
I have to admit, I played that for my wife this afternoon. She had her head down the whole time, and when it was over, she said, well, I liked the music.
That's, yeah.
I get such support around here.
A similar response here.
Oh, shoot.
That's why it's better to broadcast sometimes from the cellar of the Erie House with its built-in time tunnel, of course.
Absolutely. By the way, I want you to know they just emailed me a bill for that sandwich I never got to eat. Thanks a lot.
Oh, I'm sorry. Take it out of petty cash.
we don't have that much there. Last time I saw it was like 37 cents, I think, is all we got left in petty cash.
Yeah, that's why they call it petty cash.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, alcohol kills germs, so better have a few dozen beers just to make sure is what Vorpelbite says. So,
good advice. Unless
good advice as always, yes.
Just get your funnel and your bottle of 151 and have at it.
The stronger the proof, the less immune. That's right. The stronger the proof,
the less immune. If you live, nothing else in your body will.
Oh, shoot. But it is, you know, despite the fact that being a complete ripoff of The Shadow, it actually is a good story. And we will have a few of these down the road here because they are good stories. But I just have a hard time getting past the whole Shadow ripoff thing.
Oh,
which, you know, which is weird because when it came out, the Avenger as a Pulp Fiction character, he was a bit of a crime fighter, but it was James Monk as a crime fighter in 1939 to 1942 in Pulp Fiction novels. How he got it wasn't even his name. They said his real name was Richard Henry Benson, a globe-trotting adventurer who had millions made adventures, being a professional adventurer, whatever the heck that means. As a crime fighter with super strength, Benson has two special fighting aids, the telepathic indicator that allows him to gain random thought flashes. I once had a girlfriend that did that, and she kept slapping me all the time. While the secret diffusion capsule gives him a power of invisibility.
Mighty suspicious.
You know, yep. So anyway, the fact is, it is a well written story.
It is. And with that being said, let's listen to the exciting conclusion of the adventures of Grimont Blanston in Tunnel of Disaster.
And now back to the Avenger and the Tunnel of Disaster.
What time is it, Jim?
It's 11:58, Inspector.
Say, look at that car ahead.
Why, it broke right through the gate and went into the tunnel.
All in a fool's. Jim Fern, get out and stand guard here. See that no other cars get past the guard.
Okay, come on, Fern.
Right, Jim.
Where are you going, Inspector?
Into the tunnel.
Inspector! Inspector! You're crazy! You'll never come out of there alive! Come back!
Jim, why do you think it's important to go into the tunnel from the opposite side? We're losing time driving around this mountain.
Fern, every car that has disappeared within that tunnel went in at the north entrance. There's some reason for that, and I've got to find out what it is.
Oh, Jim, I'm afraid we're too late to save the inspector. We lost minutes getting to the place the guard had his car parked.
There's the entrance, Fern. Now hold tight. I'm going to crash right through the gate. Okay, Fern?
Yes, Jim. Oh, the guard is blowing for us to stop.
I'll explain to him later. We haven't a second to lose now. Keep your eyes peeled, Fern. If there's a clue in here, we've got to find it.
Right, Jim. Gosh, this place is frightening.
When we reach the center of the tunnel, we'll stop to see if we can pick up any sound.
There's absolutely no sign of another car in here, Jim.
No. This is the center here. I'll pull up here. Okay. Now, let's listen for a moment. No good. This place is as silent as a tomb.
What now, Jim?
I'll drive along slowly. Keep your eye on the road.
Jim, wait. I just caught sight of something on the side of the road.
What was it, Fern?
No. Something small that seems to be shining. There it is, Jim.
Huh? Oh, it's a pencil. It's the inspector's gold pencil, Fern.
Good heavens. That means he got as far as this spot, Jim.
Yes. And according to my mileage gauge, this is exactly 0.8 miles from the north entrance. Come on, Fern. We've got to get back to the laboratory. This is our first real clue.
Here, Jim. I've made some sandwiches for you. You haven't eaten a thing all day.
Oh, thanks, Fern.
How are you making out, Jim?
Well, according to these maps, that spot where we found the inspector's pencil is directly parallel with the Hartley Steel Mill.
But, Jim, if the tunnel walls are solid, as everyone claims, what connection can the steel mill have with the tunnel?
That's where my other discovery comes in.
Your other discovery?
Yes. According to this early geological history of that tunnel land, small deposits of gold were once discovered there.
Gold?
That could be the motive, Fern.
Jim, if old Mr. Hartley knew about the gold, that could have been his reason for wanting to buy the land.
Right. But old Hartley is dead. Somebody living must know about that gold, Fern. That's the reason they want the tunnel closed.
But who, Jim?
So far, we have 3 possible suspects.
3?
Yes. Merkel Evans, the construction engineer. Hartley's grandson, Lee Burgess. And Ramsey, the manager of the Hartley Mill.
I know why you suspect Evans, Jim. But what reasons have you for thinking Burgess and Ramsey may be guilty?
Both of them have the facilities and are in a position to mine the gold.
Jim, none of this is what you call solid evidence.
No, it isn't, Fern. But we haven't time to get that. We've got to force the hand of the guilty party.
How, Jim?
I want you to put in a telephone call to all 3 suspects. Tell each of them that Jim Brandon has discovered a hollow section in the tunnel wall and that a crew of men is going to start digging at once. Then hang up.
Yes. And what are you going to do, Jim?
If there's any connection between the tunnel and the mill, the guilty party will show up at the mill. I'll be waiting for him there as the Avenger.
Oh, so you finally got here, Burgess. I've been waiting here at the gate for 10 minutes.
I came as soon as I could, Evans. I had to call my men here at the mill and tell them to get things set.
All right, then. Come on. We haven't any time to lose. What was that noise?
I don't know. There's no one in sight. Say, who do you suppose that girl was who called to warn us?
Oh, now, how should I know? Can't bother about that now. Burgess, have you got enough dynamite to fill in our mine that adjoins the tunnel?
Plenty. Don't worry about that.
The minute I set eyes on that Brandon, I knew he was trouble.
Oh, stop griping, Evans. You knew this was a dangerous game when you came in on it. Anyway, we're not licked yet.
Yes. Yes, you can talk like that because you're young, Burgess. But what about me? I was a respectable engineer all my life, and until I let you talk me into this gold mining business.
I talked you into it. You're ridiculous, Evans.
What?
And you're yellow to boot.
Now listen here, Bridges.
Oh, shut up. Arguing isn't going to get us anywhere. We're both in this thing up to the eyes.
Yes, you're right, I guess. We'll have to keep our heads now. We'll dynamite our mine for 20 yards, right there where it connects with the tunnel. And when the cops break through the tunnel wall, they'll run into nothing but dirt.
Right. And then I'll sue Brandon for everything he owns.
All right, here's the shack. Open the door, Burgess.
All right, get inside.
Lock that door after us. Burgess, how many men have you got down in the mine?
8.
Where are the prisoners?
In a room near the smelter. Say, what are we going to do with those prisoners?
Do with them? Eliminate them. What else?
I don't think I'd be in such a hurry to do that, Evans.
Huh? Who's that? Who's in here?
It's the Avenger. And this is the end of the line for both of you.
Where is he? Get him, Burgess.
How can I fight someone I can't even see?
You might as well give up. The police will be here in a minute.
All right, Burgess, now come on. Let's get out of here while there's still time.
No, we've got to dynamite the mine first. If we don't, they've got the goods on us.
It's too late, I tell you.
It's our only chance.
Unlock the trap door, then. Quick.
Okay, help me move these file cases away from it.
No, you don't, Burgess. You're not going down in that mine.
Oh. You knocked him out.
Stay where you are, Evans, or you'll get the same. The police are here now, Evans, and you'd better deliver those prisoners in good health, or the charge will be murder as well as kidnapping.
To do down here, Inspector? Deliver your dedication speech for these reporters?
No, Jim. I brought Merkel Evans down here in the tunnel to demonstrate exactly how this swinging wall works.
How do you feel, Inspector?
Fine, Fern, fine. Never better. Okay, Evans. Stop talking.
All right. Now, you'll notice that there's a steel girder every 15 feet here through the center of the tunnel. Well, this section of the wall right here, between these two girders, opens just like a door. The huge hinges are behind the steel girder there on the right.
But where does the door end? There's no trace of a break in the wall.
It ends over there beneath that girder on the left, doesn't it, Evans?
Yes, yes, that's right. Now, that girder is attached to this movable portion of the wall. When the wall swings back into place, that girder covers up the crack like a piece of weather stripping.
Open it up, Evans. We want to see for ourselves.
Well, I'll have to signal the man on the other side of the wall. You see, this whole section is wired and controlled by a photoelectric eye back there in the mine. Whenever we wanted to open the wall, all we had to do was bait the beam and it swung out automatically.
Give the signal.
Evolving stage.
When the wall is swung open like that, it looks like a curve in the tunnel.
And people drove right into the mine before they realized.
But not you, Inspector.
Well, I threw my pencil out in time to leave a clue for you, didn't I?
Right, Inspector.
Jim, why didn't that section of wall sound hollow when they tested it?
It's too well reinforced, Fern. Look at the thickness of it.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Evan, that's all. Take him to headquarters and book him, boys.
Oh, Inspector.
What is it, Jim?
Smile. Those reporters are snapping your picture.
Going through the tunnel.
Yes, Fern. It proves how much the city needed it.
Is there really a rich gold vein under the tunnel, Jim?
No, Fern. As it turned out, Burgess and Evans had already mined most of the gold in this mountain. Not that it will ever do them any good.
There's just one other thing I don't understand.
What's that, Fern?
What happened to the two men who were in that car the inspector followed into the tunnel that night? They weren't held prisoner with the inspector and commissioner.
No, because they were Burgess's own men. That spectacular dash of theirs was staged to keep the disaster stories going.
Well, come on, Jim. We'd better get back to the laboratory. I have work to do.
So have I. The inspector wants me to write his dedication speech for the new courthouse next week. Characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
The Avenger.
Avenger knows. Oh, sorry.
Yep.
But as you said, a good tale, and you know, the good guys come out and on top. The tunnel gets completed and provides much needed traffic relief for the city.
You know what's weird is why nobody knew or remembered that there was gold, and as I put in there, them thar hills. But, of course, he found it, like, in 30 seconds, and that was before he had the internet, you know?
Yeah. Well, what kills me, too, is, you know what I mean? If we know our history, and we sometimes pretend we do, even when there wasn't gold, people would go nuts looking for it.
Yes. All there had to be was a hint of gold, and people would go nuts.
Yes. But alas, for plot conveniences, the Avenger came through.
Yes, absolutely. And also, alas, we do have something else that usually kind of goes along with the story, even when the Great Gar is not here.
The Great Gar? The Great Gar Lou. Yes, there is something that goes here, isn't there? Now, trying not to make it obvious that we were scrambling for a soundbite, Erie House Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story.
As always, with apologies to Gar, if there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a car or a train, then it's just the other end of the tunnel. That's it. That's all we got.
That needs a sound effect.
Yeah, baby.
What the?
That will work.
Where did that come from?
I have a yes button here, and it has about 8 different yeses. And so, you know, like.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Give me a lie. Give me a yes.
There you go. Somebody gave that to me for my birthday, so I've been playing with it.
Ah, well, it's cool. Well, we got another half hour to kill.
Wow. Hey, you know what, Dale? We've got a couple of a Stan Freberg radio public service announcement. If you play one now, I got a little something to add in about the time tunnel we were talking about earlier.
Sounds great.
How did it happen again?
Well, I was driving down the freeway on my way to work watching this old Betty Grable movie.
Watching an old Betty Grable movie?
Yeah, on a little portable TV. I had it sitting up there in the dashboard.
I know,
but this commercial comes on. The guy in a white coat says, "Now watch this amazing demonstration."
And?
I watched. Next thing I knew, pow!
Look, you can't watch television commercials while you commute.
I found that out.
You can't read a newspaper?
No.
The only thing you could do while you're driving is listen to the radio.
Yeah, well, that's all I intend to do, boy. Just as soon as I get out of traction.
Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring, or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million people.
There we go. Good old Stan Freberg. Are we there? Uh-oh. Cue the mics.
Yours was on, mine was off.
Cue the mics.
Mike, it's your cue. Oh.
When I was looking for some things for the time tunnel, I did find something neat, which people can go here and mark it so that you can watch this later. Of course, you've got some Erie House television to watch tonight. That particular YouTube link is a link to the 2002 time tunnel pilot. Now, just to read a little bit about this. This was the unaired 2002 attempt to relaunch Irwin Allen's original series, The Time Tunnel. In this version, a secret Department of Energy project, to create hot fusion, instead creates a storm in time. It takes scientists 4 hours, 240 minutes, to lock down one end of the storm while the other is still randomly sweeping across the time stream. When they leave their bunker, the scientists discover that the 240 minutes of storm was out of control, caused random changes to the fabric of history, and only they knew the true history of the world. I guess it would be them and Mel Brooks. Anyway, now the scientists must send teams back through the time tunnel to correct major errors that the storm created. DOE, Department of Energy employee Doug Phillips, is recruited into the group because of his particular knowledge of a World War II battle where the time tunnel team must go in order to stop an outbreak of the Black Plague. That would be this particular episode here.
Ah. Pretty cool.
So, Dale, you do the rest of the show by yourself. I'm going to watch this now. No, I'm kidding.
No, sure, I got something for you.
But, go ahead.
I've been talking a bit lately about a great Cleveland local personality here named Pete Myers, known as Mad Daddy. Truly our first horror host, television horror host. Didn't last long. The guy wanted to do his show upside down, and they could not rig up the camera to go upside down because they were too big and heavy and unwieldy in those days. So he hung from a pole, and audiences thought he was nuts. But his radio fans just loved him to death. He did all these crazy rhymes off the cuff. We talked about those things, zoomerating. And he also released a single, but it wasn't a song. It was a gag. It was basically talking about a practical joker. I'd like to share that with you right now. This is Mad Daddy Pete Myers.
I love a good practical joke. You know, this whole thing started when my crazy buddy Melvin hooked a smoke bomb to my car. Bluey. Boy, I love a good practical joke. So after I pick up the hood of the car and throw it in the trunk, I whip over to the post office to drop off the package for Melvin. Boy, what a package. Took me 3 hours to get the Excelsior wadded in just right, so you wouldn't know there was a live cobra inside. Boy, was he surprised. I love a good practical joke. Next day, I hear from Melvin with a bang. I guess he was pretty sore about that snake because in the middle of the night, he paints out the white line on the road that goes past my house. And he paints another one right up my driveway through the living room and pow! I hear this big noise and there's this diesel truck roaring through my backyard wearing my bathtub for a radiator cap. I love a good practical joke. And you know Melvin's nuts about golf. So I sneak over to where he plays and I grab his golf bag out of the locker. Get this, I cut holes in all the balls and I hollow them out and I fill them up with nitroglycerin, boy. What a drive. Pow! All of a sudden, from hole 1 to 18, one big sand trap. But I didn't stay one up on old Melvin Long, boy. Oh, what a mad cat he is. He gets this lion out of the zoo, and he shaves off all the mane, and he chains it up out and back to Rover's house. Lucky I caught the gag before the lion caught me. Too bad about the mailman, though. I love a good practical joke. You know, Melvin uses an electric razor, and here I am hooking high-tension wires from the third rail on the train track that runs by where he lives when he comes home to shave with 6,000 volts. Boy, will he be burning. Hey, what's that green smoky stuff coming in under the door? Poison gas! Man, that Melvin's done it again. Matt, I love a good practical joke.
Crazy laugh at the end is basically how his personality ran. Actually, this offering we just gave you, it wasn't full blown Mad Daddy. That was pretty laid back, believe it or not. He was that crazy.
Wow.
Hey, a little Cleveland history for you there, gang.
That was a little scary there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to share some other of the sound bites down the road here.
Yeah.
And maybe get Mike Lachetsky to call in again for that show sometime because he did his thesis paper on that.
He did. I happened to find it online, and it was a really, really good read. And I learned even more about Mad Daddy that I did not yet know. His early affiliation with Alan Freed, the gentleman who coined the term rock and roll, or who's credited with it anyway.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He was one of the last DJs. This was after the Payola days. He was one of the last ones to still have his own playlist. He picked his own music. It was weird and different.
And you know, there he went to New York and he just really didn't get to make it. He didn't have the same kind of a freedom that he had here in Northeast Ohio and Cleveland. And I think when you take away someone like that, you take his ability to be himself. You know, Ernie Anderson didn't, Goulardi didn't make it in other places, even though they tried in Toledo. And from what I understand, I also saw Detroit. He just didn't make it there, but he was king here in Cleveland, because he was not held back. Management, he was so popular, management didn't know what to do with him. So every time he did something wrong, he just get called on the carpet and then basically told, don't do that again.
There's a great memo that maybe you can find on the internet. I know it was reprinted in a edition of the Cleveland Magazine. It was a Sunday supplement to our newspaper. This was long ago, but it was a memo about please tell Mr. Anderson he can't ride his motorcycle through the radio through the TV station anymore.
Right, because he was, and the fact is, because they didn't want to upset Ernie, who Goulardi was just. If you're not from this area, you just don't understand how big Goulardi was. So instead of making a message to him or calling him in on it, he made a message to everyone in the station that there would be no more motorcycle riding throughout the halls of WJW8.
Ah, the good old days. And there'll never be another Mad Daddy. There'll never be another Goulardi. Try as some might, it's just not going to happen. Not in our lifetime, anyway, not that I see. The closest thing you're going to find is people doing odd stuff on the internet.
You got to remember at the time, you had a total of five stations in the area from Cleveland that you could get, and one of them, it would not have even been called PBS at the time. It would have been called Educational Television. And then you had Channel 43 and 61, I don't think. 61 came in later. So
much later,
43.
Yeah.
So there was such more limited as to what you could watch and what you could zero in on. So even if something like that happened now, local channels don't do anything like that now. But even if they did, you wouldn't be able to draw the same viewership simply because there are just, hundreds of choices of what to watch if you're actually even watching television. If you're on the internet, there's even more. Netflix, there's even more. And, it's a completely different world as to what it was then.
It sure was. Fogsbane wrote in the chat that Mad Daddy reminded him of Lon Chaney's Spider Baby intro.
Yeah,
and I could see where he got that impression. and it was a pretty similar era. I mean, Spider Baby came out in '64, a few years after Mad Daddy was off the air. But that's how cool things were back then, and monsters were huge. Toys and games and television shows, and there were still the tail end of the spook shows in the theaters back in the late '50s, early '60s.
And they kept coming out with all these different types of movies and stuff that they could compete with and show on their screens that television really couldn't do. And that's one thing I never really understood why the movie theaters fought television and cable companies. Every time it comes out, they think it's going to be the end of it. But what it is, it's more outlets for things that they can make. That's why I never really understood why they always are the last to join in until they realize, oh, wait, what if we made some money from this?
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing. I think they were looking at it one-sided. They were used to – and I'll be frank with you as a viewer. I'm old-fashioned. This is one of the reasons I want – as long as you have a computer, I want Erie House TV to be free, because that's the way television was. There's an interesting advertisement I run on the TV channel. It's an anti-cable commercial warning about the dangers, the evil. You're going to have to pay to watch television. And they would run these in the theaters.
Yeah. Don't let this happen in your community.
Yeah. And in a way, I agree with that. It killed the charm. Things have to change. Time marches on. But I hate to see some of these changes. Television was just so good to us at the time. But maybe that was just it. It was at that time.
Yeah, growing up, part of my young life, I lived in Buffalo, New York. And we didn't even have an independent channel. We had an educational channel, but not an independent channel until, about 2 years before we moved from Buffalo back to Ohio. But we could get a fifth channel. We could get the NBC, ABC, CBS, and the educational TV channel. But we could get the CBC out of Ontario.
Really?
And one of the things, I was talking to Gar the Ghoul about this. Yeah, it came in fuzzy, but you could see it. You could watch it. And one of the things I remembered watching, because he was talking about how he was too young for it, but so he wasn't watching Dark Shadows. And I didn't really watch it when it came in. Again, that was something my wife did, but I didn't. I didn't run home to watch that. But what I did get to see when it was on, and you, I guess according to Gar, you can catch these through YouTube also, the House of Frightenstone, which Vincent Price did things, mostly doing some poetry-type things. But it absolutely fabulous, because I guess because of
Gar.
Because, yeah, it geared towards fun and humor, where Dark Shadows, it had humor and things in it, but it was mostly kind of almost a sci-fi, supernatural soap opera for kids in general.
Yeah.
Now, I think you may have watched it. I didn't run home from school to see that. I ran home from school to see other things like House of Frightenstone, things like that.
No, I watched House of Frightenstone, too. That was great. It was, first of all, you got in Vincent Price. You know, how do you go wrong there?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But but again, that shows you how few channels, how few choices we had back then. And I know when I first got cable, it was because, hey, look at all the channels we got. But the second time lost everything in the divorce, but but I always say the only thing I got out of my divorce is my insurance man, because she left him and I stayed with him. But so I didn't have cable for a while. My boys were kind of missing it. We tried the antenna, which was there, a big old antenna, but everything was coming in and out, all had shadows and things like that, like you a lot of times get in the city, you know, all these shadows of things. So I ended up getting cable just to be able to even watch television. It got to that point.
It was a different era. It was a different time. We here in Cleveland, we did have, like you said, 3, 5, and 8, you know, your NBC, CBS, and ABC. We had the... By the time I started watching it, I think it wasn't quite PBS, but yeah, it was educational TV. PBS came on a little later. Channel 43 was UHF, kiddies. UHF was ultra high frequency. Your lower numbered channels were very high frequency. And that was exciting when they'd come out with a new channel. Later on came Channel 61, which of course brought us the Ghoul.
Right.
As well as, you know, running the syndicated... you know, comedy and sitcom shows.
I was just thinking about something that completely left me, so I guess I won't talk about that. But
Ben Jones.
Doggone it. An idea went through me recently, and there's no wonder. There's nothing there to stop it. I kind of remembered what it was. I had a recording somewhere of Stan Freberg actually addressing a group of advertising executives. And at one point towards the end, he was taking questions in there. Actually, one of the things he was asking, they were asking about different things and why he had to do it. And I guess a friend of his, which actually came out of Cleveland, the guy that came up with the slogan for Smuckers, you know, I guess he ran it by Stan's because Stan was a good friend. He says, what can you do with a name like Smuckers? And that's when he came up with it. When it says Smuckers, it has to be good, you know?
Yeah.
But one of the things on there, somebody asked him the question is, what can be done to help educational television? And Stan thought about that question for a second. He never thought about it. He said, well, you know, I'd never thought about that. But, you know, the first thing you have to do is get rid of the words educated television. Because nobody wants to tune in just to be educated. Anything else, you know. And he suggested a couple things, which it didn't become. But in a sense, that they were somewhat along the line of what public television became. Because educational television essentially was mostly supported by your local, probably universities, and that's why the universities hold the license to all these PBS stations. And at least in Ohio, they are the ones that, because I work with a consortium of radio reading services for the blind, public radio and public television. And they are all the public television stations are aligned with different universities here in Ohio.
No kidding.
So it's because I know that I think Cleveland State is the one that's with the WVIZ at the down here channel 45 and 49. It's the same thing. It's just simulcast. Is the University of Youngstown and the University Kent State University, actually the University of Akron also has a little bit of say into it. And it's also Alliance, so there must be must have some kind of a Mount Union connection as well, because as far as I know, that's the only university in Alliance is Mount Union. So, and of course, WOSU, the Columbus one, is associated with Ohio State. So it's the universities that actually hold the license for your public stations.
That's pretty cool.
Partially like the radio stations in the area, the smaller ones were given to the public school system. Nobody wanted them, especially the FM band, which is what most of them got, because back in the 50s, who was using FM radio? Most people didn't even have an FM radio in their car or in their house. So when you have WAPS was for Akron Public Schools, it's now 91 The Summit, but it was actually originally licensed under WAPS. And I know that there are a couple universities that have local stations up in Cleveland, like Case Western has one and things like that.
WAPS, I would think that that came from Little Italy. I don't know. that's terrible.
Well, they had tougher tags. Hey, you donate. Oh, we know where this cement is. We know where your house
right.
is. And we know where Lake Erie is. Send your dough now.
Yes, indeed. pretty soon we'll have to say something like,
the castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
And that was the ending of the show Dave was talking about from...
That was. There was. I think the part of the premise of it was almost like a... In a way, almost like a laughing for kids. Wouldn't you kind of say that, Dale?
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
The way it was set up with skits and stuff. And
pop in
and,
jokes and things. It was so much fun, and I couldn't wait to get home to watch it.
And part of it was this Frankenstein monster they couldn't get to work. And that's where Vincent Price was beside him holding a candle when he was reciting that poem. And at the very end, after he would do that, he would blow out the candle. And then the credits would run.
Yep. This is what, like a half-hour show, I think.
Yes. I don't think there were really that many of them made, but they sure got played over and over and over again. I never got tired of watching them.
It's got Vincent Price. Got to be good.
Absolutely. And mostly what Vincent Price did, though, was there was drop-ins of him doing some light-type poetry. He didn't really participate in the sketches or things like that. But it was kind of a dropping of some light poetry, and he was always smiling when he did that. You know, it was just a fun show for kids.
It was, and you could have the younger ones watching it. There was certainly nothing terrifying about it. But
no.
Very shortly, we're going to pull out of ground. We're pulling ourselves out of the tunnel. We may have to leave via the time tunnel that we have here in Erie House, but While above ground, you might want to get over to Erie House Television at 8:30. Psycho Cinema's Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather are hosting that classic Carnival of Souls, Herc Harvey produced. And then after that, at 10 Eastern, Lord Bloodraw's Nerve-Wracking Theater presents Xantar, the Thing from Venus. So there's your evening's entertainment.
Next week on Erie House Radio, we're going to update our schedule here, but next week we're going to be celebrating Howard Duff's birthday with a Howard Duff's birthday bash. And, of course, Howard Duff, he did a lot of wonderful stuff on television, including the Felony Squad and such. But he mostly was known for being on the radio as Sam Spade. And he was one of those actors that kind of got hurt by the blacklist. They were, when it went to NBC, I think it was on CBS originally, when it went to NBC, they didn't bring Howard Duff along with them. So the last 2 years were with another actor who did kind of okay. Had you not heard Howard Duff do it, but Howard Duff just did such a wonderful job. We have a special broadcast for his birthday bash that, yes, it was CBS now that I think about it, because there was a time when Suspense, who had done half-hour episodes all of their existence, even doing a couple split episodes to get in a story, there was a time, and it may have been like a summer version of the series, where they went to full one-hour episodes. And it was hosted by the movie actor Robert Montgomery at that particular time. And one thing they did was a full hour episode of Sam Spade with Howard Duff as Sam Spade with a candy tooth caper. Now, it's a lot, in a sense, reminiscent of the Maltese Falcon. So if you love the Maltese Falcon, you're going to get a kick out of this. If you've never seen the Maltese Falcon, of course, it did have Humphrey Bogart and Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre. But you're going to have that. This is a kind of a radio version of that same kind of story, where it happened several years later, and they had a couple people impersonating Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre.
Everybody so wants to do Peter Lorre.
And then there'll be a fun Lou Costello, another Sam Shovel mystery.
Oh, good. I love Sam Shovel.
So we're going to have Sam Spade and Sam Shovel next Friday here on Erie House Radio.
Good. You don't want to miss that. Next week, Erie House TV, I'm going on a little bit of a vacation, so to speak. Unfortunately, sometimes we have real lives. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be cool stuff to watch. We're just going to pay a little homage to Jim the Colonel Klink. Don't want to do Christmas until Thanksgiving, so for Thanksgiving weekend, going to be running that three-hour special of Jim the Colonel Klink, hosting some great cartoons, including the feature-length Gulliver's Travels. And it's a real nice copy, so if you're watching on your computer and running it through your television, you can blow it up on the screen real big and you won't lose much. It's a real, real nice copy. And that's going to be all next weekend on Erie House TV.
Fabulous. I can't wait to see it.
But until then, we'll be cycling out last week's schedule. It'll just continue, in the same order, just running at different times. So if you're familiar with the schedule, hey, you'll know when something's on. If not, just tune in every day and keep watching, while you quit your job.
That's right.
It's almost becoming an Erie House requirement. You must quit your job.
It is.
Thanks very much,
yes.
Evil Annie, Fogsbane, and Vorpal Bite for joining us live in the chat, plus those either millions and billions or one or two or a couple dozen that we can't see that we know you're listening. Thanks so much, and thanks for listening in the archive as well.
We like when you do that.
Well, it's time to turn the time tunnel on and get out of here, Dave. We're going to dematerialize, folks, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Can you send me back to my family?
You want to go back to your sandwich?
Yes.
Well, it's too late. I hit the controls. It can't you hear it running?
Thanks. Great.
I don't know where we're going to end up. There we go.
There, made it. Hey, that was a pretty cool find, that Mad Daddy record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
cool.
There's more. I just have to obtain it. Some great Air Checks commercials that he did with this crazy rapid patter. I think an example of him zoomerating, which is running through the alphabet.
Yeah.
You know, as I was listening to him with his regular patter and made up words in a kind of a jivey, jazzy way, he reminded me of Dr. Seuss. He reminded me of Dr. Seuss. Maybe the same iambic pentameter to some of his ravings. If you get to listen to him at length, Dave, think about that a minute.
Except the only difference being that from what I heard of, Mad Daddy used real words and such, where Dr. Seuss made up his own if he couldn't find one that'll fit.
No, Mad Daddy did the same, actually.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, he used the long before the Beatles did, he used the expression oobla-dee. When he was zoomerating, he would make kind of made-up verbs. You know what I mean? Words
maybe,
that were almost sounded like real words, but were not quite.
maybe we could sue the Dr. Seuss estate on the half of the Mad Daddy estate and have more than 37 cents in our petty cash then.
Petty cash fund. Oh, yeah. Hey, could build up our reserves. You never know. Because everyone knows we're in this for the money.
Yeah, no. Everyone gets the money from us. You keep forgetting that, Dale.
No, we do this because we love it. It's fun bringing these radio shows to you, and sharing what little bit of knowledge we might have. Dave a lot, me not so much. Gar has quite a bit, and we hope he's feeling better.
We hope he is. You know, that guy's been plagued with these migraines for so long. I just sure would like to see a guy catch a break with that. It's
Yeah. And we know you some of you really love his horrible horror show too, which is
absolutely
a real hoot. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week we were doing our Superman, and I actually had his channel on too, and I was kind of going in between the two to help keep comments going in both directions. But he's got a wonderful, wonderful following, and
he does. And they're nice people.
They
you
are.
You know what I mean?
And
he doesn't have any jerks following him around. At least he's not bringing them here. Everybody's real cool that comes here.
Well, you know, a Vorpal Bite came from his helping to push the Erie House Radio, which he also really enjoys being a part of, and we enjoy having him here, even when he's reacting to the caffeine.
Yeah.
We love you, Gar. We do.
It's fun to watch. It's almost like watching a train wreck. I can't stop watching. Or listening, in this case.
Yeah. It's just this whole thing has been such a tremendous experience for me.
It's a real treat. And, Dave, I think one more huge thank you is in order, too, is not just to Michael Shefsky for coming on the Superman special. Really, both nights of it were really, really well listened to, and we appreciate the interest that people had because we put a little bit of thought and effort into it. We wanted it to be something really special for a Cleveland son, and it really got a nice amount of listens, folks. Go back. You might have missed something. Listen again.
Yeah, and we'll be on the Erie House Television, and we'll be doing it again sometime, I'm sure, next year, even as late next year, simply because you did something with there, Dale, that no other internet TV station I know of has ever done, especially with the budget that we have for that. which is what 37 cents,
which is non-existent. But the thing of it is, it did come out something of a documentary, in a lighter vein, perhaps. But a documentary, which is what I think you and I planned from the beginning, to some degree.
Right.
But the thing keeps growing, folks. And if you do see it coming up again, and you've seen it before, tune in again. We're adding more stuff.
Right. There we have a
probably next month. No,
right.
Too early to say who or what, but we think we're going to have some more for you.
Well, because we've been invited to some stuff that we wouldn't have been invited to had we not put together what we did. And it's a very special moment, even just to go where we're going to see that, but to be able to maybe even have some personal time with some of the people that are there as well. That it's just, you're right. This is the story that will always keep getting bigger because of our connection with it. And I think with Superman's connection with Cleveland and Northeast Ohio.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy, but always props and a nod to Superman. I mean, I enjoyed the heck out of the George Reeves show and those early cartoons from the 60s. Those were really well made.
Yeah.
And got to recognize Bud Collier's voice when I would later hear the radio shows.
Yeah. Yeah. It just this has been a really cool thing. It just, I told Mike Mace about it, and I was angry because he is such a big Superman fan. I mean, this is a guy that goes around every day of the year wearing a Superman ring. He loves Superman. And I said, I really feel bad I didn't invite him along because, Mike, I just had no idea this was going to turn into this. I said, I never really expected it to become a weird, this really bad movie, which it did. But it just exploded. It was just so much wonderful stuff there. And there will be continue to be more wonderful stuff.
Sure. Well, it's not too late. As it grows, he really ought to be part of it because we all love Mike Mace. I mean, come on.
Sometimes you have to get out of his. Yep, sometimes you have to get out of his way. Sometimes you have to.
Channel.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to get out of his way, and sometimes you have to step on his toes a little bit. But he's a good guy to have around. Very, 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 very quick wit. And as we move forward,
he was a treat in that interview we did. That not the interview, but the
panel discussion. Yeah,
The panel discussion. Had fun with him there, and I love him on his History Channel. Appearance.
Yeah, he's been on the actually a couple episodes
Pickers.
Now because when they sold his car of the American Pickers, so he's been on two episodes of that, and they really liked Mike too, and they liked his stuff with coming being there and finding some of the stuff they did, and he has kept in contact with the show and tried to help give them some possible ideas and places and things like that, but.
Yeah, they let him go, too, with some of the funny stuff he was saying. You know what I mean?
I
don't know how much they may or may not have edited out, but they really let him have his head, you know?
It's kind of funny because, actually, Mike and I were guests on a couple of Midnight Movie shows that are coming up later on this month. And one of the shows, we talked a lot about the American Pickers, because I got to be there when they were filming it. I actually invited myself over and said, "You mind?" He said, "No," but because I had nothing to do with it or anything, most of the time I had to be across the street from wherever they were filming. but the cool thing was the guy that was the on location producer who was basically in charge of everything that happened on location there. So he wasn't really concerned about the actual shooting, but everything else around it. I got to sit and talk with him and pick his brain for most of the afternoon. And to me, it was completely fascinating because he's worked on a lot of shows like this and House Hunters and shows like that. But he'd been with the Pickers for about 3 years at that point. And that was really a really neat experience. And I had my camera, my video camera where I can take a high HD pictures. And it was really kind of cool because those pictures got used in the local paper and Mike used them on his Facebook page and things like that. It still was a cool experience that I got to see how they did this and put this all together. A couple times I snuck across the street, and then once they caught me with my camera, put that away. I said, okay. And then I'd get it out again later. But I had a far better Zoom than they thought I would, but.
Well done. Well, we should probably turn things.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to keep blathering on while we were finishing up here.
Yeah, probably should wrap things up, give people a chance to grab a snack and or beverage before they make their way over to Erie House TV and catch Tar and Feather and Lord Bloodrot tonight.
That's right. And, of course, Erie House, even if you're listening to the archives, Erie House Television is always on, right, Dale?
It's always on.
It's always on.
You can't escape. There's no escape.
It's like a time tunnel with no end.
A time tunnel, you say? No. You shouldn't have said that out loud.
Uh-oh.
Oh, here we go again, folks. We'll see you next time.
Good night, Gracie.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash. I think I see her. We're in 1938.
Wow. She needs to put some on.
Please. He's about 90.
Please.
Thanks again, folks. Bye-bye.